This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks so much for joining us with St. Petersburg Mayor Ken Welsh announcing Monday, January 30th, that he chose the RFP for the Heinz Rays Group to redevelop the Tropicana Field site. This podcast, of course, will be focused on that. You'll hear from all the key figures involved in the project, which obviously is quite complex. Plus, we have a separate but connected event we'll tell you about at the end of this podcast that includes an interview you'll want to stick around for. Let's get right into this, though, and begin with a lead developer for the RFP, and that's Heinz. They've been working with the Rays in some capacity for 15 or so years, and their senior managing director of development is Michael Harrison, who explained how excited he was for this project to take the next step.
Well, it's an incredible honor and privilege. I mean, we've known the Rays for 15 years. We went through an RFP process with them that long ago, but we've stayed together. We've continued to work together on and off over the last decade and a half. And to get to the point where we put together jointly a team here to pursue what we think of as a truly, you know, nationally exciting opportunity, and then to be able to be selected by the mayor and have the opportunity to imagine a partnership with the Rays for the next 15 to 20 years is just, it's a privilege for Heinz, and it's something we're very excited about.
What may be different now than, let's say, 15 years ago? What's the biggest change in terms of where you are in the process?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that there's been significant change over the 15 years. Originally, the ballpark was going to be down in the old Al Lang Field, and the development was just going to be a standalone development. And I think what the Rays have learned and what Heinz have learned over the last decade and a half is that placemaking is important, and to have the ballpark and the Rays anchor a much larger development creates the opportunity for us to do something special with the property around it, and so that we can create an entertainment district. We can create a place that people want to live and want to work and also get to go play at the ballpark and other entertainment venues that we will have within the project. So for us, it's a pretty significant change to where our line of thinking was 15 years ago, where now we really view the ballpark as an anchor of everything that will happen around it.
You've gone through many of these large-scale processes as a company before, so what is the next phase of this like from Heinz's standpoint?
Now we really feel like we've gotten to the starting line. It was a very intense process that the city ran. It was very competitive with other teams, submitting proposals. And really what that did with the mayor's announcement today is it put us right at the starting line. And so it's really the first time we can now engage with the city. The process itself was confidential. We weren't allowed to engage with city staff. We weren't allowed to engage with the mayor. So we put together the best plan and vision that we could, but we know that we need the city to be part of that. And so we're excited, and as to your question, the next immediate step is for the Rays and Heinz and our team to sit down with the mayor, city staff, to say, okay, we selected your proposal because it was the best for the city, and now Heinz and the Rays, we want to know how we can make it better.
And I guess that's part of the next phase of developing and changing and modifying?
Well, I think we certainly heard and saw from the other proposals different ideas. And I think that from Heinz's perspective, we've been successful in development for 6.5 decades because we learn from other projects and we learn from our competitors. And I think there's an opportunity here to pick up ideas that other people have surfaced and incorporate them into our plan in a way that can make our plan even more exciting and a better plan that works for the city and for us even more.
Heinz has worked with the Rays for quite a while. Obviously, there are many Tampa Bay Rays employees who've been working on the project even longer. Team President Brian Ald was understandably enthusiastic about the latest approval.
It feels great, and it means the world to us. You know, we have tremendous respect for Mayor Welch and that he saw our vision, saw it as a good one for the future of his city, for the historic gas plant neighborhood of which he's been raised, and for the future of Major League Baseball is all just outstanding. We've got a pathway forward in St. Petersburg now, and we're eager to pursue it.
So what is next, and how many other hurdles are there along the way?
I don't know exactly what's next. I'm really looking forward to, for the first time since the RFP was issued, being able to sit down with the mayor and talk about how he wants this to go forward, where we're going to go, how we're going to get there, and in what order. Because there's arguments to be made for any number of steps along the way. You know we need a financing plan for the ballpark. We know we need a city council approval of a development agreement. We know we're going to need some county support. And so each of those steps can be taken in order, and I think we work on them all at the same time. But what I think you saw today was overwhelming community support for a really great vision for this city and this baseball club, and that's exciting.
You have been through this process a number of times. Does this feel any different, having taken this next step? And in your mind, what is different about this process, maybe, that you've learned from some of the others?
Well, this one is unique. This is the first time we've been part of an RFP, and so we've got a lot of the vision laid out. Certainly, there'll be changes to it along the way as we get more and more feedback and more individuals and organizations let us know what they really want to see from the site and from the baseball team. But this is, you know, for the first time in several years, our hometown saying, we want the Rays here and we support your plan for how to do it. And that's excellent. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we had a mayor who was completely uninterested in our plans and an RFP process that didn't include the Rays. So we've come an awful long way towards aligning incentives in a city that, you know, I live in and love.
So for people who are on the Tampa side, what would you, who are also interested in seeing where the Rays land, what do you say to them?
Our responsibility as the stewards of the Tampa Bay Rays Baseball Club are to make sure it stays in Tampa Bay for generations to come. That challenge hasn't been easy. We've worked on both sides of the bay at various times over decades to try to figure out a solution for our long-term home. We haven't been able to reach it yet. And there's still a lot of steps that have to take place in St. Petersburg. And so we owe it to all of our fans to keep every option on the table and to keep pursuing every option available to us. And that means that the dialogue with Tampa's got to be open. In the event that something falls through over here, we need another part of our region to be able to pick up the ball and run with it, so to speak. So for us, this is a great step. It shows that we've got a mayor and a city behind us over here in St. Petersburg. And in the event that we can push through everything, we will get to that shovel in the ground and the securing of the Rays' long-term future. But I don't want people to think that all our eggs are in one basket, because we owe our fans more than that.
And overall, I guess the goal is, regardless, you want to try and move this as quickly as possible just because of where we are in the timeline with the stadium lease.
Yeah, our use agreement does run out at the end of the 2027 season, and so time is of the essence. We have never been in dialogue with both St. Pete and Tampa at the same time prior to now, but simply too much time has passed, and we need to figure out the answer sooner than later. So right now we've got to do it. And we will pursue both options in earnest. And as soon as we've got a solution that ensures the future of the Rays in Tampa Bay, we'll be ready to jump on it. Today, St. Petersburg took a really big first step towards making that happen.
Congratulations on that step, and best of luck with the next.
Thank you. Very much appreciate it.
That's good perspective from the Rays' Brian Ald on what's to come and what's taken place. As Brian mentioned, this project truly has a chance to impact so many people in so many different ways. Gwendolyn Reese probably understands the history of the area as well as anyone in Tampa Bay. Reese is president of the African American Heritage Association of St. Petersburg, Florida, Incorporated, and grew up in the gas plant district where the current ballpark resides and a future home would be.
I can't get beyond this step. I'll just be honest. I am so celebrating. I am so happy. I'm just ecstatic over the fact that we were chosen. I hoped, I almost knew on a certain level that it had to be us because we had the best proposal. We have the means to do it, but you still don't know. So to be sitting there or standing there, because I was on my way out to do a presentation, and to hear the mayor announce it, I just can't tell you the feelings that came over me. I believe in resting in the moment. I believe in relaxing and taking a breath before we take the next step. So I'm in that relaxing, celebrating, taking a moment before I move into what comes next. But I'm so excited about implementing our proposal. I'm so excited about the team sitting down and engaging with the mayor and engaging with city administrators, city council, and the community to really begin to flush out and make the proposal even richer than it is today.
And as strongly as you feel, explain why you feel it was always the proposal that you felt the city needed to go with.
Because I sensed, intuition is very much a part of my life, I sensed the honesty, the integrity, the commitment of not just Brian, and my initial conversations were with Brian, but it just wasn't Brian. I sensed that with every team member I met. And that means so much to a community who has been lied to, promises have been broken over the years, we're still dealing with inequity and structural racism, and to talk to a team which every single member of that team was committed to equity. They did not understand the implications. I had a conversation with one team member, and he said, I didn't understand white privilege, but I do now. I didn't understand. So to be with a team who, even though they didn't deeply understand all of this, they understood the importance of equity, and then they wanted to reach out and learn more about what they don't know.
And in terms of the proposal itself, what will it mean to the former residents of the gas plant, like yourself, and other residents of St. Petersburg?
It would mean that that promise that was broken, that included affordable housing and economic opportunity and employment, you know, and equity wasn't a part of the promise then. Equity was not a word back then. You know, we said equality. We didn't know anything about equity, and equity and equality are not one and the same. So to talk about finally being able to make good the promises that were broken, and with an added layer of equity to it, in terms of equity as it relates to housing opportunities, to business opportunities, to employment opportunities, to contractual opportunities, equity in every phase of this, from the planning, there was equity at our table in writing our proposal, all the way through to completion of the program. That's just amazing. And then to bring life back, there's life here, but it's a baseball stadium, and the life is when games are here. Now we're talking about a vibrant community, bringing life back to a community that meant so much to us, that was very vibrant, and we will be able to see that vibrancy again. We will be able to see our neighborhood come to life again. That means a lot. And then to know that our story will be included in the development, that we will be honored in many different ways. We don't even know all the ways yet, but we know we will be honored and our story will be told. That's just, I can't explain to you how important that is.
How big a piece is the museum in all of this?
The museum is a big piece, but it's just a piece. The story of the gas plant neighborhood will not live in the museum. The story and the history of the gas plant neighborhood will live throughout the development, the redevelopment, in so many ways. The museum is very important to us. It's important to our community. It always has been. We've been fighting for improvements and enlargements and all of that, a new museum. But finally, I think we can see it no longer as a possibility, but a probability. We can see that it is going to happen. We may not know the exact date, but we know it's very soon we will see it happen, because the Heinz Race proposal has it in the first phase, and that's incredible. So now we're talking about our history at a level we never imagined. We're talking about the Woodson African American Museum of Florida telling that large picture of our history in from Africa to America. And then we're talking about the gas plant development with African American Heritage Association telling the story of this specific neighborhood. We never imagined that our story would be told on that level, on those levels. It's amazing. It's like a dream come true, and I'm so glad that I'm still alive to be able to be a part of it.
Gwendolyn Reese has been a tremendous resource and a big part of the Heinz Reyes team, and the same could be said for Andrick Frazier, whose company, Best Source Consulting, is specifically focused on consulting services in the areas of environmental, social, and governance.
Extremely pleased and relieved. A little bit of anxiety, especially with so much work that had to be put in such a short period of time, but extremely looking forward to finally being able to have open dialogue with the city, also with open dialogue with other members of the community, you know, who had maybe chosen another side prior to the award coming today.
Tell me what excites you from the diversity aspect of this more than anything else.
Well, I think it's an opportunity to build something from scratch with intentional equity in mind. A lot of times you're coming in trying to relieve or solve a problem. I think here we're trying to build up a talent pipeline. I mean, that's the way we're really looking at this. And we have 20 years to work on a project. You have a pretty good runway to make sure you develop some pretty robust talent.
How unique is that? And what can this mean to St. Pete?
Well, typically initiatives like this start from a governmental angle, and it kind of did this time, but it was more of a directive. The funding is coming from the private sector and it's part of the project's actual budget, so we know the funding will be there. And there are no strings tied to it, so we really have really just an open blank slate to really be creative and make sure that we impact the community that needs us the most, which is South St. Pete.
What are the pieces of that project right now that excite you the most, and how can community engagement even take it a step further?
Well, there are really two pieces. One I mentioned before is the talent pipeline piece. I mean, we have about $5 million we're going to allocate specifically towards really training our youth in entrepreneurship and trade to make sure that, you know, they're able to be part of the workforce when things start going vertical. And the other piece really is tackling affordable housing, especially off-site and off-premise. The ability to be able to bring home ownership to fruition to people from South St. Pete for the first time is extremely exciting and can be transformational.
And from your standpoint, what's different about, let's say, this next phase of the project versus putting together an RFP?
Well, we kind of go, and I say we, Best Source, we talk about this whole thing about plan, do, act. The RFP piece was a lot of planning. The do part is going to be negotiating a contract, and then now is going to be time to act, and that's what's exciting.
Andrick Frazier gave us a good look at who this project can impact. There are a lot of unique features, though, included in this project, thanks to the people designing it. I sat down with three members of Gensler, the lead architecture firm: Elena Saul, strategic director; co-managing director of Gensler Tampa, Sarah Joubert; and Chris Zomp, firm-wide leader for cities and urban design.
So one of the things that I think has been really great working with the Rays is how many relationships and how engaged they were in the community already. Whenever we work with teams that sort of have that established set of relationships and trust, it kind of helps us take a project like this and elevate it and take it further. So when we started working with them, you know, there's a lot that they had already done in terms of reaching out and hearing and listening. I think Brian emphasized how much listening would be a big part of this process. Whenever we look at community engagement as part of these efforts, it's really important to have, you know, ears wide open and be thinking in a lot of different contexts and channels. So doing that direct outreach with different communities, being on the ground, bring people to the stadium, like having ways that people are getting different experiences through this process, and you're able to sort of connect these stories to how we might, you know, incorporate them into what this design might be. So I think the fact that they've looked, they're looking and talking to all these different groups and really creating ways for them to be actively engaged, you know, starting now, has been really exciting. We work closely with Ashante Keys and on the team in terms of developing the strategy around community engagement. And we talked a lot about, you know, what are the ways people need to hear messages, making sure we're really engaged with the faith community, making sure we're really connected to, you know, what's going on in South St. Pete, what's going on in different, with the youth, with older generations, just making sure you're thinking about this in a lot of different contexts and that we're hearing, you know, what are people's needs, what's important to them, and how do we, again, weave that into this organization and weave this into the development that we're looking at. I think partnerships is another really big thing as part of this. Of course, the collaboration with the Woodson Museum, Tampa Bay Watch. I'm not going to remember them all, but you know, there's a number of different organizations that were really critical in kind of thinking about their constituents, who are their audiences, and how are we bringing them into this project and listening to their needs. So really, again, trying to be as far-reaching as possible to gather up as much of that as we can and let that inspire and connect into the project.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the partnerships aspect also really influences the physical planning and the design that we, you know, put forth in this project. Elaine mentioned the Woodson Center Museum and also the ACT, the mm-hmm. Arts Conservatory for Teens. Mm-hmm. So these two projects alone, took on a really prominent location in the site. So the big rendering everybody sees with the Woodson Museum in the foreground and performance venue on the opposite side of Booker Creek, and that's really, you know, the nexus of the project. That's where, you know, our two east-west and north-south networks cross. So not only do we have these great partners, but we're giving them, you know, the best real estate in the project, you know, so that they're highly visible and create that welcoming gateway into the site.
How unique is that kind of partnership in terms of community engagement for something of this size and stature?
Well, I think something of this size and stature, you know, this type of partnership and engagement is critical. You know, part of what we're doing by, you know, in this plan is taking all of the voices that we're hearing and really, you know, creating a community that is inclusive, you know, somebody, you know, something for all. So the engagements, what we're hearing, and then responding to that through the design and the master plan is really, it's critical.
I think to kind of build on, you know, in other projects where there's a sports-anchored development opportunity, I think the thing that's been so important as we look at development moving forward is how are you creating a 365-day experience? How are you extending what's happening with the team and that the sort of game day and kind of taking it beyond the boundaries of that stadium? So really trying to find opportunities to think about activated landscape, to think about parks, to think about, you know, how you're bringing different age groups together. And partnerships are such a big part of events and programming and bringing people to the space and also creating just energy and different audiences. So I think, you know, the world has gotten to a place where we need sort of a lot of diversity of uses and a lot of diversity of thinking and diversity of audience. And partnerships are a way to leverage, you know, everyone's relative strengths and kind of connect all of that energy together in a way that I think creates a really unique and interesting destination. So I think more people are moving in this direction, but this is a really significant opportunity to do that in a holistic way.
Because I guess you've worked on so many different types mm-hmm. of projects. How does this, the way this has been kind of constructed, how different is that? And how beneficial do you think it'll be long-term in terms of the success of the project?
I mean, partnerships make a significant difference. And so the projects that are successful kind of use these partnerships. And I would say the Rays came, like when we started this conversation and just, you know, started talking about the project and the opportunities, you know, I was sort of mentioning the relationships that already existed were so valuable to sort of being quickly able to integrate them into our process. So, you know, it was a quick call to, you know, how do we get the Tampa Bay Watch involved? How do we get, you know, different... How does that sort of impact how we think about Booker Creek and what we might be doing with that? How do we think about ACT and sort of this music hall performance venue? So, you know, we know that there are parts and pieces, but the partnerships really activate it and create different intentionality and missions and way to connect dots. So I think the Rays really came to it with a lot of great relationships that helped us to go further faster, and that was really important.
Well, and I think once these partnerships are there from the beginning, it makes for a much more authentic project. You know, we've worked on developments where, you know, these things are tried to layer in after the fact, and you know, they're just not accepted as legitimate by the community around them. I mean, it's you know, it's places where you bring in an investor from outside the community or outside the country even that is trying to, you know, make something out of this. Out of a project, and it just doesn't have the same effect. It's not as, it's like I said, it's not as accepted. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, of the community or for the community. So.
I think a lot of it comes down to trust, and, you know, partnerships are about both creating, you know, trust within the partnerships, but also the trust that those partners have in the community themselves. So I think this is about, you know, bringing that, all that together and building that trust. So, you know, the Rays already had a lot of great relationships they've invested for years, but how do we kind of continue to amplify that through this development and through these partnerships?
In addition to members of Gensler, I chatted with Evald Kolas, founder and principal of the Storen Studio for Architecture.
I mean, this is a very exciting moment for us to have the city call us a partner. We're truly honored to sit down and speak with the city and the general community and figure out how we can better serve design in a more open way. So this is an incredible moment for us. We feel very humbled, and it's great as a person who has called St. Pete home for 7 years to be able to play a small part of this with it being in my backyard.
What excites you most about the project itself?
What excites me most is, frankly, the vision that the mayor has had, the city has had, and us working with city council to also understand what their constituents want. I think this is going to be a real project where we can actually serve the entire community through partnership and also through what happens in the next 20 years. And I think as designers, you know, it's not necessarily just about the building we're designing. We're interested in the neighborhood we're designing. And it's great to have a bunch of stakeholders that we can actually serve with our design talents.
So how does this almost, obviously you guys have done a lot of work to this point, but how does this, from your standpoint, the type of work you're doing, take it to another level?
I think from the type of work we're doing, for instance, you know, in the Edge District right now, we're designing a hotel, and that hotel is great, and it'll serve the community around it and the visitors that are coming in. But here we are designing an entire neighborhood. As a designer, one of your dreams is to be always part of a master plan and be part of designing a neighborhood, frankly. So this takes it to another scale, and the fact that it's 86 acres, anchored by a ballpark, and also we'll have several blocks of mixed use, and it's really about serving all and economic development for all. This, as a project, is a generational project, and it's any architect's dream to be part of it.
That's Evald Kolas of the Storen Studio for Architecture. Now, hopefully you've gained a sense of the enthusiasm building for the project, but also the understanding there are many steps to come. And as those steps occur, we'll obviously be chronicling those in upcoming podcasts on the stadium efforts. Now, somewhat tangentially related to all of this is an event that the Rays are sponsoring on Thursday, February 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Tampa Theater. That event is a free community screening of the uninterrupted film After Jackie. Now, After Jackie was released last year and tells the often overlooked story of the second wave of talented black baseball players after Jackie Robinson, including Bill White, Curt Flood, and Bob Gibson, who were up next in the fight for equality. Now, there were tie-ins in the film to Tampa Bay, and someone very involved with this film, Jackson New Smith of the Spring Hill Company, also is a former Rays employee. Jackson will provide additional context at this screening, and I asked him about coming back to Tampa Bay.
Anytime I get the opportunity to come back to St. Petersburg and Tampa, it's a special treat for me. I love my time and my experience in the Rays organization. It's a first-class group of people who I think are, you know, the Rays always get tagged as being a progressive organization, but I think the scope of what progressive means goes beyond, you know, what you hear about in terms of the on-field product that they're able to put out there year in and year out in baseball operations. I think the front office in its entirety is a progressive one in all the best ways. And this experience with this screening, you know, what have you, is just another example of how the Rays continue to, you know, just be at the forefront of moving the needle in the sport and just the industry as a whole.
How important is this movie to the Tampa Bay area, especially in light of the timing that we're in our world? And also, you know, just this kind of like the start of Black History Month as well.
Yeah, it's a great question. And first and foremost, I mean, credit to the Rays organization for really taking the bull by the horns on this effort and spearheading it. I think, you know, when this film came out, we premiered it at American Black Film Festival in the summer of 22. And we were fortunate enough that a couple of members of the Rays executive team came to that initial screening. You know, Razi Amador Fink, you know, who's one of the highest ranking women executives in the game today. Denard Spann, obviously a former Ray, a Tampa native, you know, and just one of the game's greatest ambassadors. And then Cole Figueroa, the Rays director of baseball operations, who, you know, is is on his own path to become a GM one day and be a leading executive in the game. You know, the three of them made the effort to come to the screening, and I think they were really taken by how much St. Petersburg specifically came up in the film and the role that St. Petersburg played in the evolution of the 64 Cardinals team that that won the World Series, that was spearheaded by the three main, you know, athletes that we focus on in the documentary, Kurt Flood, Bill White, Bob Gibson. And really, you know, what the city of St. Petersburg did to help these men and this team really break down some institutional barriers that I think by and large have gone hidden, obscured from societal view for a really long time.
So from your end, then, it's a positive historical story. I've watched the film, and something that is important for Tampa Bay natives, residents, to see and understand, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, one thing at the Spring Hill Company and Uninterrupted we strive to do is, first and foremost, you know, tell athlete empowerment stories and stories of perseverance and persistence and bringing projects to the into the zeitgeist that really have been hidden, obscured from plain sight for so long. And I think, you know, as we talk about Black History Month, a lot of times we hear about a lot of the same stories. And I think what we really tried to achieve with After Jackie was telling a story that we haven't talked about quite enough, which is the story of, you know, these three men, this ball club, and really each in their own distinct way, how they continue to push the conversation forward, continued the progress that Jackie had made and taken the baton and ran it further. And what we learn about that team and the discrimination that they faced, not only on the field, but really off the field, and the way that they found a way to kind of collectively come together to really push not only baseball forward, but sports and even then further society forward, was something we felt just really deserved to be told. And fortunately enough, you know, history was a huge partner. Major League Baseball was a huge partner, and Firelight Media, you know, Oscar nominated filmmaker Stanley Nelson and our director Andre Gaines did an incredible job to really bring the story to life.
They did. And I hope folks come out to the free screening, or if they, you know, if they haven't watched on the History Channel, find access to it through that way as well. Are there other chapters that are to be written? You mentioned new stories, and I think this kind of sort of brought things up to date in some ways, but there's so many other chapters that you could go back and be more complete with.
Yeah, it's a great question, Neil. I think you know, anytime you have the opportunity to unpack stories in this game that we all love, of baseball, I think it's a really unique opportunity. I think baseball storytelling is a lost art form in a lot of respects. I think we know distinctly some of the stories that have stuck with us throughout our youth to, you know, adulthood that revolve around baseball. And in a lot of ways, those are the stories that make us fall in love with the game, whether, you know, you came up learning about the stories of the Negro Leagues or of, you know, the old Yankees, or, you know, you fall in love with some of the feature films that are out there about baseball. Baseball is a unique way of storytelling, creating narrative and sharing its history and it's how it's evolved, not only in the sport, but really through the lens of America. And I think absolutely, yeah, there's tons of stories to be told. I think having the opportunity and the platform to tell those stories is what's most important. And just continuing to remember that, you know, there's so much that goes beyond what we talk about with Jackie and Jackie's legacy around the Black culture in the game, the broader scope of culture in the game, and just the players and the athletes and the front office executives and everyone that really has had a touch on trying to leave the game of baseball in a better place than they found it.
Are those some of the talking points that you hope someone who watches After Jackie in this screening in Tampa will take away? And if not, what are some other important points that you think are critical?
I think the biggest thing that I hope coming out of this screening is people recognize that there's always more than what meets the eye. A lot of times, and I said it a little bit earlier, but you know, history just gets hidden and obscured, and stories like this one that are so paramount to the evolution that the game took at that time period and that crux. You know, I think of Kurt Flood being, you know, stooped at the epicenter of the civil rights movement, and you know, there's that piece about him going with Medgar Evers and Dr. King and Jackie, and you know, marching alongside of them. And you just look back and you're like, man, I never knew that. And I think that's the hope. I think the hope is that people walk away feeling like they learned something that they didn't previously know, not only about baseball, but about
you know, American history, about the role that baseball played in American history, and the importance and significance of not only baseball, but the St. Pete region, and Tampa Bay region in that story. It was something that I took a lot of pride in, having spent time living in St. Petersburg, working in the Rays organization, with the stories, is some of the archival that you get to see of St. Pete in that time frame, and some of the stories that come out of St. Pete kind of being at the precipice of a real cultural shift and change mover that I hope others, you know, take away with them as well.
Sounds like you are truly enjoying learning along with this, with the transition from working for baseball operations with various teams throughout the sport to a very large company in Spring Hill that is producing films like this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an absolute privilege. I can't speak more highly of the people that I've had the opportunity to collaborate with and work with throughout the course of my career, starting with the San Francisco Giants, you know, pit stop at the commissioner's office, obviously the Rays organization, the Chicago Cubs, and now Spring Hill. Having the privilege of working and collaborating with some of the world's greatest producers and executives at the epicenter of entertainment, media, and sports has been a huge, you know, whirlwind and learning lesson for me about just what it takes to really create, you know, significant pieces of film and TV and documentaries in this Hollywood landscape. But it's been an absolute joy, and it's been fun to see how, you know, the sauce gets made, if you will.
That's Jackson Newsmith. And if you want to attend the free screening on February 2nd at the Tampa Theater at 7, seating is first come, first served. No reservations are required. We look forward to seeing you. Now, this helps kick off Black History Month, in addition to having, obviously, this film, a great connection to Tampa Bay. In addition, the Rays Baseball Foundation and Rowdy Soccer Fund have announced application details for the annual Racial Equity Grant Program. Applications will be accepted from Wednesday, February 1st through Tuesday, February 28th. The Rays Baseball Foundation and Rowdy Soccer Fund annually commits $100,000 in the fight against systemic racism. For more information about the Racial Equity Grant Program or to apply, all you have to do is visit raysbaseball.com/racialequitygrant. Thanks so much for listening to our latest podcast. We will chat with you soon.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.